Hello, everyone. My name is Joshua Gilliland, and I'm one of the founding attorneys of the Legal Geeks. With me is Mark Zaid, and we will continue our epic voyage through Falcon and the Winter Soldier in our legal analysis of things that do make us scream at the TV screen when senators start handing out pardons. So, Mark, how are you doing this evening?
Hey, I'm doing well, Josh. How about yourself?
You know, I love Saturdays. We get to hang out and talk comics and TV shows, and this is good after a week of lots of writing, research, and depot prep. So this is a welcome change. So
yeah, it is. You know, it's busy time. I can tell you, for me, legally, it just never stops. I can't even keep track of one day to the next. Not even sure when it's the weekend. Other than now, I know we'll talk about comic books and movies and television.
Hazards of working from home: all sense of time ceases, and you know, it's like every day is just blur's day, and that gets rough. So with that, let's nerd out about the series. And I'm going to start with something positive and also end, because I know we're going to be pretty brutal on everything else. I'll start with, I love these characters, and I love living in a world where we get weekly, you know, comic TV shows. And the actors clearly love their jobs and love the characters and have a good respect for the source material. So I'm very grateful that we have that in this day and age. That said, we do have lots to talk about, because my God, there were so many things wrong. I want the no prize that Sam called Dr. Strange or Wong, and one of them made a portal for him to get to New York, because if not, he had to fly at Mach 7 to get there, and that flight suit is not going to be that pressurized so he doesn't turn into goo. So, do you have any opening thoughts before we dig into this?
I agree. I will start from a positive and say, I do very, as my cat is making an appearance as well. Can you want to say hi to the audience? I don't know. There she is. She wants to come and join in. Okay. I do give incredible credit to whoever has done casting for Marvel Universe and these films, because I think they have done a fantastic job. And I'm even starting to realize that, you know, some of these actors I had seen in other shows years ago and didn't quite know that it was them. Like the guy who plays Bucky was in a Disney related series for a bunch of years, playing the Mad Hatter or some character. I forget, one of the Disney characters. I'm blanking on what the name of the series is, because it wasn't something I watched. I just knew about it. But I like how they've done things. I do enjoy every week, like yourself, watching. It's the same way that I always had to watch the Star Trek episodes, even when Voyager just got horrible, or when Enterprise just got horrible at the time, or where, you know, at Enterprise you heard like Rod Stewart singing for the opening theme song instead of Star Trek theme music. I stuck with them all, or Stargate Universe as well. I stuck with them all, even though, as I taught my girlfriend today, the saying of what it means to jump the shark, going back to Happy Days time of Fonzie water skiing over a shark, where you just keep plugging through. Now, superficially, yeah, you know what? This episode, I said in the last week that I was concerned it wasn't going to be able to, in the a la Lost television series issue of kind of tying everything back together. And I will say they did a better job of tying things, tying up loose ends than I expected them to. But that was because everything was so superficial. Now, there's a lot of legal issues we'll talk about tonight. A lot of them are continuous from episode to episode. But I will say, as I read more about this episode to see what other people thought, there is a Rolling Stone article that I would recommend to everybody. It was incredibly critical, and I really agreed with it, that I didn't like the storyline. I didn't like the writing in this episode. I thought they tied up loose ends too easily and missed the mark of being able to develop storyline. Has nothing to do with the legal issues that we can debate, but it was probably my least liked episode of the six.
I have mixed feelings. You know, on one level, I really like the fact that Sam's Captain America costume is right out of the comics. And it's like, wow, that's how that looks in real life. Bold, well done. And it's, they didn't mess around with it. But then there were the high level superficial issues, you know, like how did people get into the country? And we'll talk about that. And again, traveling from Louisiana to New York in under like 7 minutes, not physically possible with a jetpack. So again, Doctor Strange, like, and they were busy fighting some demons. So it's like, hey, sure, we're, you know, good luck. We got our own monster to fight, and like, let them do their thing. Like, I can accept that part, but there's, I feel the writers failed civics. And if you're going to write a Captain America spy thriller story involving the government, you have to have a basic understanding of how government works and how laws work. And they completely swung and missed at that. And that was really hard for me to stomach. And the other thing that I think is at issue, at the beginning where we see the GRC office building getting raided and you know, the attack that takes place, this was clearly made before January 6th. And I don't think anything like that would have been made given what happened in our country and in the prosecutions that are happening for those who thought it was a good idea to overthrow the U.S. government. So, no. I had some problems with this. So
yeah,
let's.
I mean, yeah, and there were a whole bunch of things, you know, like, and again, we'll get into them, and they're not as much legal. There are some legal nuances to it, like you said, on the civics issues. We talked about this previously in some other episodes, that some of these small points could have easily have been written differently without any material impact on the storyline, but gotten things correct. But you know, the senator who has now been in several episodes and clearly played an important role, and yet we have no idea what his name is. Wasn't even good enough to have a name.
Yeah, and was there some SAG contract issue that they had to keep using him? Because if there was, that could explain the insanity of having a senator wielding executive power and doing stuff that should be done by the Secretary of Defense, or things done by an ambassador, and or even somebody from the White House as representing the president. And people forget, there are 100 senators. Now, maybe if D.C. becomes a state or Puerto Rico, you know, things can change then. But right now, we're at 100. Every state is equal, and they get two. There are not committees with one senator. That's not how it works. And even if you lost like 80 senators in the snap, there are mechanisms to replace senators, whether it's, you know, the big normal one is governors appointing people to fill the vacancy. Some states have special elections, and then things can feather out from there with different levels of oddity. But the point is, there would always have been 100 senators because we have a failsafe. We really don't have a good failsafe if we lose members from the House of Representatives, because there's no reappointment process for them. And it varies if states have special elections or not to replace somebody. So all of that's a really complicated way of saying that senator made no bloody sense.
Oh, and that senator played basically the Secretary of Defense role at one point, played the U.S. ambassador to the United Nations at one point, or a special representative to some international body at one point, played essentially either the director of national intelligence in a scene we'll talk about later tonight, or the president of the United States acting with authority from a pardon standpoint, which we'll talk about as well. So, yeah, I, you know, again, it may have been just as simple as we just need to be able to tie some loose ends, loose threads, really simple. This guy, it's not who he is that's the issue. It's what he does to help contribute to the scene. I get all that. That everybody may think differently as to whether they like it, they don't like it, you know, how deep do you want to dive into it, things like that. You know, this is how they make televisions and movies. So, but yeah, I didn't like it.
Yeah, neither did I, because if you're hiring hundreds of extras and you have hundreds of people that have lines, you can have the Secretary of Defense, you can have the ambassador, you could do all of that and have it make sense, as opposed to random white guy with a beard who has the flag lapel pin, therefore he has to be important. It's like, guys, come on. And again, they did this in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. as well. So there's this weird trend with people who write for Marvel who think senators are more important than they actually are. So it's still an important job, but it's one thing if they're just issuing subpoenas and showing up and giving speeches. This is, it's again, it's, whoever wrote that failed civics, and it's super frustrating. Yeah. So now that we have that cathartic experience out, let's talk about the flag smashers and the conspiracy to assassinate international leaders. Now, if they were breaking into the UN or to a federal building, you know, there's clear big issues with trespass when that happens. Because like on the UN, we could be dealing with like sovereignty issues. Like it's like storming an embassy type situation. Same with a federal building, as we're learning in all the prosecutions of the people who wanted to murder one of the vice presidents of the United States. We don't like that around here. That said, if this was not a government building of any kind, it's still private property, and there was still a conspiracy to murder leaders from other countries. That's illegal. Like the conspiracy is one crime that's illegal. And the second part of this story that's illegal is you can't go around killing people, period, end of discussion. So there's a conspiracy to commit mass murder. Anything you want to add there, Mark?
You know, there's still a lot of, again, it ties into sort of more of the logistical issues and security and internet and knowing how governments would function, how intelligence issues and operations would function from work that I do. But I just, it is because they have how they had to do the storyline, of course. Mm-hmm. But some issues that came up from that beyond just these legal issues, obviously, is I still am unclear. Let me start with this first. I'm still unclear about the flag smashers as they've been created in this series, because it looks to be these really young, they referred to Callie as a teenager, I think more than once, really young, unsophisticated, certainly articulate because they're actors, so that's clear. It's weirdly organized, but in a way that looks to be not financially organized. You know, if you look to Al-Qaeda, Bin Laden, other groups that had real ideological agendas and motives, and Bin Laden was very wealthy, had a lot of money, you know, but was living in caves and not using cell phones because they were concerned that the CIA would be listening in and other intelligence agencies listening in. These guys just didn't seem to be very sophisticated, yet somehow they kept making it into every place they wanted. Now, yeah, I get it. They were super soldiers, but the super soldiers only gives them certain strength. It doesn't give them money. It doesn't give them organizational capabilities. It doesn't give them access to technology. Now, we did learn a bunch of things in this episode that will call into question a bunch of legal issues, especially with Agent Carter and the like, and Batroc and et cetera. But I was trying to figure out, especially in the aftermath from the timeline, since we know when this is taking place, we had the King of Wakanda murdered at an international event. So you would have thought there would be a lot more security and preparedness for something like this, especially because here's a legal issue tied to it. We saw that U.S. military / intelligence was aware that the Flag Smashers were in New York City. And why would they be in New York City? It was to stop the vote. So did they not warn anyone that this was possibly going to happen?
Oh, it's like, I mean, like literally that's the insanity from 9/11 with agencies not talking to each other of, hey, there's chatter, something's going to happen. But the CIA and the FBI didn't talk to each other back then. So there's that level of this. Also, being a super soldier and you're running around with your iPhone tweeting out information, you're not going to be immune from a drone strike. Right. Like that problem would be solved super quickly. And we've been very effective of that in the real world. So again,
had access to her cell phones because they keep handing Bucky and others their cell phones that they then walk away with.
Yeah, it just, yeah. So it's like Target would be acquired and then eliminated. And this would have been a 4-minute series as opposed to 6 episodes because they would have solved the problem quickly.
Going back to that, and you mentioned it earlier, excuse me, about, you know, getting into the United States and they got into the U.S., the Flag Smashers did in the last episode, but we didn't raise this. But it dawned on me in this one, just as I was thinking through the OPSEC, the operational security at this meeting, wherever it was, of how poor it was and how light it was. And then, you know, look, I expect people like Batroc as a, you know, super villain. You know, my understanding from recalling him in the comics, you know, he's this super kind of kung fu type guy, you know, no super strength or anything like that. He's just, you know, incredible martial arts or I may be getting the wrong of what his skills, but that type of skill. And, you know, yeah. But he's a definite super villain, you know, fought a lot of superheroes over the years, you know. You expect guys like that to be able to sneak in and out of countries no matter what. But again, I go to, how is this, you know, teenage girl who's clearly known as the leader of the Flag Smashers, how is she and all these other people getting into the United States? They're, you know, presumably they're not coming through customs and showing passports or fake passports. And even if it was a fake passport, you know, Callie is really, I'm not sure where the actress is from. I think Britain probably. But she's, you know, with those freckles, she's really, really noticeable, right? You can't really hide her, you know, unless she has the Carter, whatever thing she had, the pseudo scientific face mask thing that Sharon had to be able to hide her true identity that is revealed in the very beginning, which I definitely want to talk a little bit more about, but I'll throw it back over to you to start.
Yeah. There's a lot there. It's like, even if they came in via shipping container, again, for 20 years now, the Coast Guard has been dealing with issues of like, hey, how do we check for explosives being coming into the United States via shipping container? And I have friends in the Coast Guard who were, you know, in after 9/11, and their frustration with like, we didn't have the technology to do that in October of 2001. And again, 20 years later, like they're much better at it, but how did they get in? They entered illegally. And it just, And again, and how did Sharon get in, like, with a phone call from Sam as well, you know, in from like the other half of the planet within 10 minutes? So like, was there a hyperloop? Was there a portal that she took? I mean, all of that, I mean, that's the stuff that gets obnoxious, because if you're going to put the band together, they need more than 15 minutes notice to mobilize, especially if you are scattered across the planet. And I mean, I'm willing to, you know, again, go like it's a comic book story, like, you know, you're forgiving on a few things. But when she's in what, Indonesia, that's a long plane flight.
Yeah.
I'm
disappointed. Again, this is not a legal issue, but I'm disappointed in the lack of character development in the Flag Smashers in particular, in understanding their ideology and motivations. You only get snippets here and there as to what they're upset about and why they're organizing. And you see in multiple episodes and especially in this last one, but it manifested itself in the early ones too, where there's clearly sympathy there from Bucky and Sam, and probably others, I'm sure too. And the writers are clearly trying to create this sympathetic agenda, motivation, but I didn't particularly understand what it was. And I mean, I was far more on the side of hating this character and waiting for her demise than any type of sympathy, no matter what they were trying, because they didn't develop what it was enough about what led to the speech that we can talk about a little bit later between Bucky and the senator and whoever else these other members of the whatever were.
Yeah, it's super frustrating because they were to cater to different groups in the United States. So on one level, you could go Flag Smashers want open borders and they're trying to blow up the government. So they're Antifa bad. So everyone who votes MAGA, like, they can identify that way. And like, that's one way to that I saw this of like, okay, they want open borders. All right. And they're upset that they survived the snap. They moved around. They filled vacancies and took jobs. And then they're getting the boot when people come back 5 years later. The problem with all of that is it doesn't make sense. I can accept the idea that half the planet was killed in the snap. That's the part that's believable in the superhero story. Society trying to put itself back together again, you know, in 5 years, it'd be one thing if it was 2 weeks or a month, but the fact that 5 years had passed, power would change. So, and we've talked about this before, like, did Salt Lake City become the industrial hub of the United States? Like, you know, there could have been weird realignment that if, wow, like, LA's vacant right now, everybody in LA died, they disappeared, and people in San Diego are still there. Why would people from San Diego go to, you know, deserted LA? LA would stay a ghost town if that had been the case. Water supply in California, again, riparian rights are a big thing in California. And if there aren't people in Southern California anymore, we don't have to deal with sending water down there. So again, there would be changes that would take place over those years.
Yeah, Atlanta, Georgia could be become the new Hollywood, which is something we'll talk about a little bit later in this broadcast.
So the world could have completely changed. And if people come back and they're like, they would be the ones on the out, because the world, you know, literally went on without them. And it's not like their bank accounts were just held in perpetuity collecting interest.
No, we talked about that in the first episode, because the reality is, although there's no way to know how this would have played out because there's so many unknowns. Like you said, we know half the people die, but half the people doesn't mean it's if there's three of you in the room, you know, or let's make it easier, four of you in the room, two of you disappear. It could be nobody in that room disappears, but four people in another room disappear, because you don't know where that balance is. So it could be there's nobody left in Indonesia, or the entire country of South Africa is left. You know, who knows? We talked about how could the courts function, because we don't know, had the judges left. How about the court clerks or the administrative, the county clerks, all the things that would have happened in the aftermath of a normal death, of the reading of a will, or at least a sheeting to the state if there is no will, and things like that. So the reality is the people who would have, if things functioned the way they should have, and there's no way to know they would have, but the reality is the people who stayed would have been in a much stronger legal position than the people who disappeared and then came back 5 years later, because they don't exist any longer as a matter of law, at least the way it would have been. They would have been, and we'll talk about it a little bit later too, like Isaiah, who doesn't legally exist anymore because he's dead. He's supposed to be dead. That means, you don't have a right to go to your apartment because that lease has been terminated to somebody new. You don't have a right back to your job. It's not a USARA, which is the laws that protect military members who get called up, activated for duty, and their job back home at Walmart is protected while they're overseas on their active military duty. You know, it's nothing like that. So it's a kind of topsy-turvy world that they introduced to this, but they just didn't develop it well enough.
Agreed, and that's why it's frustrating, because it's backwards than how it would have played out. And those who came back, it makes sense that they would be demanding to have their homes back. And if they had acquired great wealth, what do you mean it went to my obnoxious kids? That would be the problem that the GRC would be facing. Right. Not how do we screw everyone on the planet that survived?
Doesn't legally make sense.
No, and it doesn't logically make sense.
It doesn't make sense. I mean, I'd love to hear what they were thinking about that. And on the, I'm still, and we have addressed this, and every time that we've talked about an episode, I still don't understand what the legal status is of Bucky and Sam. Who do you work for? Because in this episode, it makes it look like even more so that they're just independent actors doing whatever they want under no guidance from anyone, and dealing with things like with Sharon Carter that, they don't even have an understanding about, given she's the power broker, and still trusting her as if she was Agent Sharon Carter, Agent 13 of S.H.I.E.L.D. They never did a very good job. And this goes to what I started out with saying, the loose ends, like Bucky's pardon and the fact of what the criteria or the requirements for his pardon that he was supposed to do, and this therapist, which we do see a snippet of at the end, he's in violation of all of them. There doesn't seem to be any accountability legally whatsoever.
Yeah, it's nuts. And that's, again, all very frustrating, because it's like those were solvable writing problems that, Sam's an independent contractor with the government, or he gets an allowance from Stark Industries, like just basic things that Tony set up this fund and it's collects interest, is self-perpetuating, and that's how people get an allowance who have signed up with the Avengers. Like, it could have been very clean. And instead we get, did Bucky have 70 years of back pay, which again, maybe he's just loaded and, sleeping on the floor of his apartment because he's, was still recovering from the trauma he endured for 70 years.
Well, and I found it really interesting. And as far as I know, this was the first time, at least that I caught, that this happened. But in the very beginning, when they both get to New York City, right, and Bucky walks through the police line during the siege, then, they let him in and the guy says, something, you know, thank you, or how are you, Sergeant Barnes, or something. He calls him Sergeant Barnes. And I don't know why that was done at all. I think it was a military guy that's, you know, could have been National Guard. I don't know. But again, that's what got me onto of like, well, what authority does Bucky or Sergeant Barnes have to walk through this line? And then, of course, that's where he meets Sharon, who is disguised as a guy, you know, who, no idea. How did that person get through the line? And then, of course, the thing that, again, logistically and script-wise, I don't understand, she reveals herself to Bucky in listening distance of the military guys. And, you know, just, you know, everybody's back is turned. So, okay, now the guy is now a woman, and they're just going to walk hand in hand, you know, or side by side into the building that is under siege by the terrorists. And throughout, of course, then Sam shows up and, you know, throughout, of course, it is the three of them. Yeah. That's it. Where's the military? Where's New York Police Department? Where's anybody? Anybody? Is there anybody besides the three of them?
Well, that, and this could have been, again, for it's supposed to all be connected. This would have been an easy cameo for Daredevil, Jessica Jones, or Luke Cage to have an appearance, because if you're going to be running around New York, have those street level, again, a Luke Cage cameo of helping out would have done wonders fanboy wise, because again, that would be easy. And it would make sense that he would show up with like, hey, everything went crazy, I came down to help, because that's what superheroes are supposed to do. And they just blow that off. And yeah, so it's very frustrating for all those reasons we've just discussed. Now as for the Bucky issue of like Sergeant Barnes, it seems to be that everyone who participated in the fight against Thanos in upstate New York is very well known. Like that must have been covered in the news extensively. There were probably Nightline and 2020 interviews with people all over. So again, I could go for a no prize of Bucky's known because he helped save the day, he got pardoned. You know, you get a World War II war hero walking around who's still active. Like I can accept that. As a fan to go like, okay, maybe I could get that. But on the same token, where's Luke Cage? Where's Matt Murdock? Danny Rand? Like, where are those folks who were active in New York City when all this is going down?
Yeah. Oh, gosh. So we see, obviously, lots of crimes that the Flag Smashers are creating or causing or are committing. You know, one after one after the other. And, you know, again, I think a failure in the storyline development is we don't get any understanding of why Callie becomes so hardened in her desire to kill and then not worried about dying herself. That just jumped so much. And they missed a good opportunity, unfortunately, I think, to get that. So It was increasingly becoming hard to be sympathetic to, I thought, to her and their issues, their agenda, because of that, even though clearly you still saw Sam in particular and Bucky, but Sam more so, you know, particularly sympathetic to her. But then we see, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, she saw one of her friends beheaded by John Walker, and she never mentions that. And when Walker confronts her, she has no animosity to Walker. And that's insane, because that means she either she doesn't care about the people who've sworn loyalty to her, because you can literally be beheaded in public and she won't ever discuss it again, nor show any animosity to the person who did the crime. Yeah. And that's weird.
And Walker's presence you know, still, I mean, there is a storyline issue there. There is a legal issue there, because we talked about this, especially from the last episode, from episode 5. It continues into episode 6 of, again, why is this guy walking around free when he's clearly, at least the way they portrayed him, he's got some issues. They know he took the super soldier serum. He's somewhat unstable. He has killed someone overseas in a very nasty way.
Yeah.
But yet he's now being allowed to operate as, I don't know what he's doing. He's now being allowed to operate. But then, of course, you don't even hear Sam or Bucky say anything or second guess the fact that, oh yeah, Walker, why don't you come and help us? Thank you very much. That didn't make any sense legally. Storyline wise, in no way it made any sense.
No, and the fact that they throw in this weird redemption type arc for Walker is obnoxious, because he's clearly unstable. Like, tell that story, you know, have him be off at, you know, whatever Julia Dreyfus has in store for him, either training or captivity or whatever, and do that. Have him deployed as the U.S. agent instead of doing the quippy reveal at the end that makes it sound like it's a feel-good, happy ending for him, because it's not. He's a psychopath, and they're giving that a really big mulligan, and that's super disturbing, because it would be like, you know, the Halliburton guys, and I think it was Halliburton, or the contractors who murdered some people overseas. We're not okay with that. Like that, in showing that a U.S. service person can murder people in public and no one cares,
yeah,
is a horrific, yeah, horrific message. Yeah. Horrific message. So...
And again, this is not a legal issue, but I have got to say, because I'm trying to think if I had said this in an earlier thing. I think I kind of raised it when we talked a little bit about the science of superheroes, and there's a couple of great books: Science of Superheroes, Science of Supervillains. Can these things really happen? If you get bit by a radioactive spider, could you really get spider strength? You know, or shoot webs, whatever. But I always have a problem when Hollywood, it's one thing comic books, but when in Hollywood TV shows create these superheroes to do certain things, and there's these level of inconsistencies or things that just make absolutely no sense. You identified one of them. How in the world did Sam get from Louisiana and New York City in the time frame allowed? And then, you know, I'm watching in episode 5 as Sam is trying to train with the shield, and he's bouncing it off the trees, right? And he's got like the, you know, these rubber mats that you would have in like your gym class at high school, that you can bounce off the pylons or something like that, or on the football field, so that if you run into the end zone, you don't, you know, kill yourself because you bounce off the rubber. And okay, I get that. That part was okay with me. But I'm trying to figure out, at one point in episode 6, Sam throws his shield. It knocks down one of the flag smashers, you know, nails him in the arm, and yet it still bounces directly back to him. I don't think human arms work that way.
No, it would sever the arm.
Sever the arm, but it's not bouncing back in the same direction. And then... this mighty shield, I mean, we know how strong the shield is. That I don't have any issue with, right? The secret of vibranium, all that. I can, that's pure comic. I can accept that. That's not even maybe comic book. There is some reality to that. But the notion that we see in one scene when Sam's fighting the helicopter, you know, trying to chase the helicopter, and he causes it to crash, I want to talk about because there's a legal issue with that. But, you know, he puts the shield up with also with this new costume, and the helicopter, you know, bounces off the shield. Okay. But yet when he's fighting with Batroc, he throws his shield and Batroc throws a chair and it knocks the shield down.
Yeah. Wrong. Really? Like it should have gone through the chair. So again, like lazy writing. And you know, and on since you raised it again with, you know, the reality factor, there is a hysterical book. It's great for white elephant gifts or stocking stuffers called Ain't Got Time to Bleed, Medical Reports on Hollywood's Greatest Action Heroes. It's the Emmy reports for John McClane from Die Hard or Dutch from Predator. And it is hysterical. It's a fantastic gift. And but yes, again, so there are doctors like us lawyers who look at this stuff and go, time out.
Right.
Like his windpipe would be crushed. So,
or no, you can't heal from that injury in 48 hours.
Yeah, it's not a flesh wound.
Right. It's not the Black Knight in Monty Python's Search of the Holy Grail.
Exactly. So all of that, again, I feel like this has been a lot of therapy for us, but let's get to the actual kidnapping. So we have the Flag Smashers split up the delegates. So some of them end up in trucks that are locked and are driven away by to be hijacked. And then we have a Flag Smasher play helicopter pilot for some of the delegates as well.
Quite an amazing helicopter pilot at that.
Yeah, it's just in, you know, doing the air wolf maneuvers. So
yes, cool. Exactly.
Again, childhood memories.
Yes.
kidnapping, 18 USC, section 1201, seizing people and transporting them. That's absolutely kidnapping. I'm sure with deeper research, throwing in the fact that you have international representatives is just going to make it worse for the terrorist involved for doing that. And the same analysis applies for the helicopter, same statute. So again, like that's parallel, despite the fact that they're different vehicles. But Mark, you identified this issue and I went like, oh yeah, that's right. Sam's rescue of the people on the helicopter. Let's discuss if Sam's plan hadn't worked with finding out that there was one person through facial recognition who could fly a helicopter.
Right.
If that had ended in a crash with all on board killed, what would have happened?
You know, and your saying of facial recognition actually just triggered in my mind another legal issue that goes right back to what actually is Sam? What is his legal status? Right. You've mentioned January 6th a number of times. And, you know, there have been any number of individuals who are being prosecuted now who have been identified through facial recognition software. And we're not at the level that the Brits are, because the Brits have the CCTV all over the London and elsewhere and facial recognition software going. We've got a lot of privacy issues where this is a really untouched subject that hasn't been significantly dealt with yet. So now I'm wondering, so Sam with whatever, well, I forget what he calls the little robot part of his costume.
Red Wing.
Thank you. Right, which was a real bird in the comic books now as I think back. You know, Red Wing and his suit, whatever, has obviously access to all these government databases. Okay, what's up with that? There's a lot of legal issues that go with that as well. But the issue that I was thinking of kind of harks back to Age of Ultron, which then led up to Civil War and the Sokovia Accords. It's the notion of, what happens when superheroes are trying to save people and are involved in these battles that are destroying property? And though never really shown, whether in comic books or maybe now more modern comic books, but the old days, no, or movies, the fact that there's tons of innocent bystanders dying at everything they do. And I mean, that's how Zemo was created in this realm. That's not how Zemo was created in the comic books, but in the movie world, Marvel Universe now, Zemo was created as a collateral damage of the superheroes, the Avengers, saving innocent lives, but sacrificing innocent lives by accident as collateral damage, which is the notion of collateral damage. So when Sam makes this arrangement and identifies who, you know, the unknown person in the helicopter, that she could fly the helicopter, so he makes the decision that he's going to, you know, just like he did in whichever episode it was, the first episode, I think, right? When he was almost in Libya over Tunisia, the same maneuver, flies through the helicopter, grabs the person out, which probably physically would kill that person, but that's another, that's that, we'll leave that one to the doctors in their podcast, you know. And then the helicopter, of course, starts to go down, and thankfully the person grabs it. So, but the other helicopter also that went into this, I don't know if it was the same helicopter, I guess it was, of almost crashing into innocent people. And if that had happened, is there liability for Sam or the U.S. government? Because we don't know who Sam works for. If he does work for the U.S. government, there are immunity laws, statutes that apply. Actually, if they sue Sam, if he works for the U.S. government, because I've done this numerous times in suing, the Justice Department can invoke what's called the Westfall Act, saying that Sam was acting in the scope of his authority, of his duties as a agent of the U.S. government, and then step into the shoes of the U.S. government. And then the U.S. government probably would be immune, because this is more negligence, I think, than anything else. It's not an intentional tort. So it just raises all the issues, because thankfully most of the time in these scenes, we only see the fact that people's lives were saved. We weren't seen or shown that lots of innocent people died.
Agreed. And there's just so much there, because one could argue it was reckless. Apparently the pilot wasn't wearing a seatbelt. The soon to be pilot had to take her seatbelt off, or she wasn't wearing it because she was being irresponsible. Pick one. And apparently gravity wasn't, and the laws of physics did not preclude her as they were entering the dive from being able to make it to the front seat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that she didn't fly backwards to the, after part of the cabin from physical force.
Yeah, so again, it wasn't like it was the plane at 10,000 feet. So you have some time. Okay, you're at like 200 feet in the helicopter. We'll give them that one, because they counted down from 5 to 0. So she timed it perfectly.
She was ready to pounce like a cat up on those controls. Physics wasn't applying at that point in time. I do want to highlight knocking Sam with the rotors. Again, before learning to drive, I learned to fly an airplane. Never any rotary aircraft, but an airplane. The idea of using the rotors of a helicopter to knock Sam into a container ship seemed rather dangerous for the pilot to make that call, because the idea of eating rotors is just, you don't want to lose your rotors. The helicopters need those to fly. And I've spent lots of time on San Francisco Bay. I have never seen a ship, a container ship, with giant concrete tubes on deck. I have never seen that. Maybe it's happened. But I also think of the insurance claim that would need to be done, since I work for a law firm that does a lot of insurance coverage. There would be some lawyers filling out paperwork for that, going like, oh my God, like, how do we explain that?
Yeah, is that an act of war, force majeure exclusion? I wonder, in the realm of superhero reality, do insurance companies have exclusionary clauses for superhero created damage?
They would quickly.
We can't cover that.
I think they would quickly. I think just as there are like the act of terrorism clauses, mm-hmm. and this might fall under act of terrorism or hijacking, maybe something along those lines. But would a shipping company foresee the need for an exclusion of a helicopter clipping mooring cables for cargo? Like, is that something that they would have thought about from an insurance perspective?
I mean, look, I think in certain cities of the world, insurance companies, especially after Age of Ultron, at least, and you know, probably before that, going back to World War II and Captain America. If I'm their lawyer, I'm adding in superhero damage exclusionary clauses.
Oh, they would, and I think after the Battle of New York, that probably would have happened fairly quickly as well. And there would have been very fascinating litigation. But I say that just because I'm developing a taste for insurance coverage. So it's like, oh, that's how that works. That's super complicated. So, but yeah, they get lots of aerobatics. So then we get to trucks are hijacked. Guards are tossed out. And Carly decides, I'm going to light one on fire in order to get Bucky to go save people, because again, she's now totally indifferent to human life, literally doesn't care because she sees them as a means to the end. Mm-hmm. And you know, the trucks are doused with gasoline and they're lit on fire. That's murder. You know, 18 USC 1111, and trying to do it by arson. Yeah, that's definitely murder. So There's no, and there are multiple incidences of attempted murder that follow. So that's one element of attempted murder. Trying to drive the other truck off the scaffoldings would be the second attempted murder charge that would go against her for the occupants.
Or each person. And you're recounting federal law. Of course, there's state law for each of those as well. A state city.
New York would have a thing to say about that as well. So like they
should no doubt take jurisdiction, but
yeah, they many big cities and states are a tad sensitive to that sort of thing happening in their backyard. So yeah, the DA is going to be very busy the next morning going after everyone that was brought in by the police. So yeah, that's a lot of the fight. There are two conclusions to the fight, and we'll just take them in story order, even though it might not be logical order. So when Sam does his scolding of the one U.S. senator and the other unelected officials from foreign countries that are representing the GRC, you know, he scolds them basically for a variety of rights that are being violated. And one of them is the idea of taking homes from people. And that gets right into Fifth Amendment analysis, because the government, via federal or state through the 14th Amendment, cannot take property without just compensation. And there actually has to be a taking of property, not a prospective taking of property. And there are entire books dedicated to eminent domain and taking, and it gets super complicated quickly. Or if that property had been condemned. But you know, the GRC's point is, people came back after 5 years, there are other people living in their homes, so let's toss out the new people and they can get their homes back. And Sam scolds the senator for that. And I just gotta say, in real life, scolding politicians doesn't work. Ask Greta Thunberg about her rants with, "We will never forgive you." And Republican members of Congress go, "That's cute."
Yeah.
Yeah. Bye-bye. Get out of our country.
I grew up in the New York City area, and even on a quiet day, I've never heard so much quiet during the time Sam was giving his diatribe to the senator, and that, you know, everybody can hear him and everybody was focused. Again, from a logistical storyline standpoint, I mean, we understand why they did everything they did. And it was an incredible Captain America speech. Yeah. You know, there were a lot of feel-good moments in this that from a just, you know, oh, this is what we want to be able to believe in type thing. Sure, sure, yeah. Sure. You know, that's all well and good. No issues with some of that. It's just not going to play in that way, unfortunately. And I still, again, you know, there wasn't enough storyline development of trying to understand what this vote was actually going to do. Because, I mean, you can imagine just in the way world politics works that the powers, the world powers, the big powers, we're dealing with all the other countries who we can dominate over for dealing with things. Mm-hmm. But the way they all talking about, so we've got, over 300 million people in the United States. I forget what the exact number is, give or take. So again, you don't know whether half actually disappeared. But so let's say probably a third to half disappeared. So 100 million or whatever, 75 million to 150 million people disappeared and then came back 5 years later. Are we talking about that whatever this vote is going to relocate Americans? Really? And we allowing a world body to do? It's not the Federation of Planet. We're not in the 24th century. Yeah. Whatever, 23rd century. I forget what year Federation of Planets was created in Star Trek, but we're not there yet. So this was not going to work out from a political legal standpoint. We talked previously about that if it was a treaty the United States signed off on, there is a process by which the Senate ratifies treaties and things like that. So the timeline, frankly, probably doesn't work either. Although, hey, look, you never know. The Patriot Act got rushed through in the aftermath of 9/11 20 years ago also, because everybody just wanted to react real quickly and things got in there that never would have gotten in there before. In fact, having been involved with the Patriot Act and issues prior to, during, and in the aftermath, a lot of what comprised the Patriot Act were proposed amendments to the law that had been around for years and just hadn't been successful. And then they just dumped them all in. And we see that after terrorist attacks and big attacks. So I worked on legislation in the aftermath of Oklahoma City bombing, which the anniversary was just recently, April 19th, 1995, that it happened. And because of that, we had legislation that enabled me to sue the government of Libya, because I wrote a provision that got introduced as part of this legislation that we had been working on for 3 years. So I say that as an example that in the aftermath of the return from everyone, certainly in that sense, I could see Congress, whatever fashion Congress still exists, push forward on legislation, maybe even this treaty that created this world body or approved it, that wouldn't have been done so if logic dominated, more about fear and quick reaction and things like that. So, I give them that. I give them a little bit of that at least.
It's one thing to have a Tolkien or a declaration war against America or declaration of war against Mexico for the Mexican-American War based upon like the fog of war, like who shot first. Where, what side of the Rio Grande shot first, or
the Spanish-American War, 1898, Hearst newspapers created that war.
Exactly.
Coming of the Maine that never happened.
Yeah, yeah. And so, you know, those are three examples, but that's starting a war as opposed to a massive bill to put people back in their homes. That would be an international treaty that would then be ratified by our government. And then there's the state issues. That's a bloody mess. Like, again, this the idea of executing this within, if this is 6 months after the battle in upstate New York where Thanos is defeated, that's crazy. Like, that's even for a superhero story, you know, there would be better ways to reintegrate people into society, and that would be humane. Because Endgame ends upbeat. Like, there's, you know, the global celebrations. Humanity knows it's not alone in the universe. Like, there would be better plans, one would hope, as opposed to the poor storytelling that we got. So, again, this is... there are always challenges with this stuff. But, again, this it's just... painful. Let's moving on from that, because again, this is still the night of Sam does his speech, doesn't know that Sharon's the bad guy, and we have some flag smashers who get arrested. They're being you think that they're going to get away because there is a flag smasher working as a police officer or part of the military that's there, and Zemo's butler does a car bomb. Now, it doesn't look like it's a rocket, which meant that that old man somehow planted an explosive device underneath an armored vehicle that was well guarded. So that, as be as it may, is Zemo responsible for that, or is this an independent act from the butler at this point?
You know, I mean, again, you know, another just sort of loose end as they try and wrap up the flag smashers and just create all, you know, whether it's creating additional storylines for new series, new movies, fine. But, you know, we're still trying to figure out this notion of the raft, everything yeah. about the raft, this super maximum prison out in wherever it is, the Atlantic Ocean or whatever the heck it is, that ostensibly is operated by the U.S. government. And, you know, initially, what all I'm thinking of when they say they're going to take these guys to the raft is I'm thinking, okay, so again, we're imprisoning people without trial at all. And I've got a lot of due process problems with that. And then, of course, they blow up. And then you're like, okay, wait a minute. I didn't even recognize the guy at first as being the butler. And then you see Zemo in his cell listening to the radio. And I'm trying to figure out, all right, how does he have reception underwater? But okay, maybe there's a technological way, I suppose. I guess submarines probably can listen to the radio. But how is Zemo manipulating and controlling things from that? You know, anyone who watches Law and Order, or frankly even knows probably reality, but anyone who watches Law and Order knows that gang members can still kill people outside of prison from prison. Okay, I get that, but that's not Supermax the raft underwater. So, you know, that just raises all these other questions of, you know, what kind of background investigations are being done on the guards who work at the Supermax the Raft that somehow Zemo is still able to issue orders to his elderly butler to kill the super soldiers that nobody else was able to kill. And I'm not even sure if the bomb would kill the super soldiers. Who knows? But
so this is, again, my thought on how it happened. And for the Nobel Prize, God may Stan Lee rest in peace, for like how they did this. You know, the butler and Zemo docked, and Zemo probably knew, hey, I'm going to end up back in prison. You finish these guys off. you know, listened, follow Sam, follow Bucky, where they go, you go. And when they're arrest, when the, you know, these super soldiers are arrested, finish them. And so maybe it was like a prospective order of how to carry it out. So maybe it's there's no communication because Zemo's taking up reading and painting and.
Sure. Maybe. Yeah. I'm always amazed how it is always so hard to kill a super soldier until it's so easy to kill a super soldier. In the same way of, you know, how many, I mean, decades from a comic standpoint that Batroc has survived and then with one bullet he's brought down.
Did Sharon get one shot or two into him
before? Maybe two. Okay, I give her, you know, we'll give her some credit and say two. I'm not sure it was two. Yeah. But yeah. Anyway, it was just like a normal bullet from a 9mm that, you know, brought him down. And it was quick, it was easy. But let's talk Sharon. Okay, Sharon.
Who would have been smart enough to wear a bulletproof vest if she has.
Yes, or right.
Or four shields.
That Callie shoots for her. So lots of legal issues now exist lots of storyline issues, but a lot of legal issues exist with respect to Sharon because I guess for the first, I mean, in some of the storyline in the comic books, you know, she was on the outs during Civil War and things like that. But I don't think she, at any point in the story, in any comic book storyline, is she as criminal as she is now. She is a bad guy now. She is, I don't know if she's a super villain, but she's definitely a bad guy. So, you know, the little we knew of the power broker from the prior episodes was this is a really bad person. This is a person who's controlling, you know, the worst part of the world and engaged in all sorts of underground crimes, helped create the Flag Smashers in the current form they are, at least with respect to the super soldier serum aspect, hired these Flag Smashers, hired Batroc, killed Carly, killed Batroc, and, you know, engaged in all sorts of criminal activity beyond what we knew Sharon was with this art dealing and things like that. But, you know, way off the charts now. I mean, she's like one of the top
villains
in the world, although has no superheroes, superpowers.
She makes the Kingpin look mild.
Yes, very much. This is an attractive, short, young Kingpin.
It really bothered me having read Captain America comics. I found it offensive, and for multiple reasons. One, she's a stalwart hero. You know, Peggy Carter is her aunt. She was raised to be good, and the fact that they just have her flip is dumb. Like, it's offensive to the character. And there's nothing justified about it. And more importantly, she's bad at it. Like, she got her golden goose killed. She hired people to try to kill her friends that she then went out and killed. And then after getting the pardon that we're going to talk about and her old job back without a background check, she makes a conspiratorial phone call in public in front of a government building. That's not a criminal mastermind. Like, this, it's like, hey, we have Emily Van Camp. Let's have her sound cool. And like, that's just bad writing on so many levels.
Like, you know, I'm reading the Death of Captain America, all the versions. And of course the whole thing starts with her in this, of all the grief she's having about Captain America. And, you know, I agree. I don't like how they've developed. I mean, literally, they really have developed her into the Kingpin, into a version of the Kingpin.
It's offensive because she's supposed to be a hero. And for the things that she did during Civil War that would have put her on the outs, it's super lazy writing that she ended up like not getting forgiven 7 years ago or 5 years ago when after they lose Infinity War, that Cap doesn't get her name cleared. Like, it's just, it's lazy. And that would have been extreme retaliation by the US government to say like, no, she's still on the blacklist and we want her head on a pike, but everybody else is forgiven.
Yeah, and that makes no sense. I mean, no. Right, she didn't do anything that was more egregious than anybody else, for at least anything that we have seen. And there's no reason to understand why she would want to kill her friends,
frankly, or feel
betrayed by Sam and Bucky, you know, maybe feel betrayed by Steve Rogers, or Nick Fury, I suppose. That storyline obviously is not developed and from what we've seen, but yeah, no, it doesn't make sense. So, I mean, there's all sorts of laws that, and you outlined some RICO issues, Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization Act, but, you know, all sorts of laws from around the world, because she's dealing with all sorts of international art theft. She talks about she's going to be involved with arms smuggling. I mean, she probably every country in the world could prosecute her for something now.
Oh, it's just so stupid and bad writing. And like, and you know, so you got all the people that she killed and other conspiracies. RICO, you know, there are RICO issues because it's racketeering is a long list of activities that include any act or threat involving murder, kidnapping, gambling, arson, robbery, bribery, extortion, dealing in obscene material, or dealing in controlled substances or listed chemical, or any act relating to bribery, mail fraud, and other crimes. Yeah, she's got like 80% of those. And now she has the intent to get into illegally exporting weapons. And so we have an Export Control Act that does have a criminal punishment provision. And this is 22 USC 2778, which again is huge. So this is subsection C. Any person who willfully violates any provision of the section, a treaty referenced to the subsection or any rule, okay, all the other things. The fine could be $1 million or 20 years in prison or both. So the fact that she's just calling her personal assistant from a government building that's clearly filmed in Atlanta is just, it's just, she's bad at it. And it's just stupid writing. And it doesn't understand, they don't understand the character. And that's what I find offensive, because they understand Sam and Bucky. And well, so
when they were in the building trying to save everybody, each person had an assignment, right? And Sam gave Sharon the assignment to deal with that guard.
Mm-hmm.
And then we see what she did with mercury vapor, which I'm not quite sure what that, it, whatever it did was horrible to this guy. It was like burning his
melting face type.
I'm assuming he's dead. So I'm not sure. So here's another legal issue of what liability, if it's ever found out that Sharon did that and she did it on presumably the instructions of Sam. Obviously Sam did not tell her what to do with taking out the guard, but you know, we talked in earlier episodes about conspirator culpability, right? The bank, the guy who's driving the getaway car is as responsible for the death of the guard inside that he had no knowledge his buddy was going to shoot. So that was in fact, maybe that was the foreshadowing of that Sharon is now a bad person. Because like, oh my God, you know, Sharon in the old days, you would just kick the crap out of this guy and knock him unconscious. Mercury vapor boiling off of his face. I'm thinking Indiana Jones, you know, Ark of the Covenant at the end where the Nazi's face is just melting off. It's like, I'm like, oh my God, what just happened to that guy? What did she just do to him?
Yeah, he was a bad guy, but the heroes aren't supposed to mutilate.
Yeah,
like that. It's just, it's like, Well, that's intense. Sam would have been very freaked out if he had known that was her plan of, I'm going to put this IED device on him that's going to spray him with a chemical that will melt his face. Like, that's... She's a bad girl now. Like, she's very bad. And the other thing, so my father passed away back in August, and I got a bunch of his documents, and it included the background check he did to get top secret clearance back in like 1981 for working at Vandenberg. So I read it. It was really detailed with everything that those investigators dug into. And I did chuckle reading. He did list, my aunt was divorced like four times within under a decade. And so like listing all of her married names, the amount of time that she had those married names and the directions to where her house was in New Mexico or wherever. And it's like, you read this, it's like super detailed. They do nothing for Carter. Not a damn thing to go. So where have you been the last 7 years? What have you been up to?
Yeah, you would think American intelligence agencies or foreign intelligence agencies would have had some handle in knowing what she was doing. Maybe not as the power broker, but at least as Sharon Carter while she was there. And, you know, we're again still trying to figure out how did she get back into the United States. But hey, I guess Bucky came through, or Sam, and got her the pardon, as we saw at the very, very end, you know, opening the door to, you know, lots more segments and everything. But before we kind of get to that, let's take one step back. We see, and you mentioned it earlier, Walker now becomes U.S. agent. And that's fine, because that we knew was coming, because that was straight out of the comic books for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out, and this was their loose ends-ish, you know, tying things up so simply, but simply in a way that it just doesn't make sense at all. And it's like, okay, Louise Dreyfus, you're back. That's awesome. You know, it's still a weird scene because it's you and Walker's wife, and you're having this conversation with Walker's wife. Why are you talking to Walker's wife while Walker is getting dressed in a closet or something like that? Fine. But then, you know, it looks like it's the same hearing room that Walker was in when the senator and the military officials, who we don't know who they were, we're stripping you of your title of Captain America. Why are you guys back in the same hearing room to engage in what is clearly going to be, on this path, not necessarily kosher endeavors? So I don't quite get that again. And then I'm guessing now that room is where Sharon walks out of at the end extra scene, where she again we see this weird unknown
senator
granting a pardon that he has no authority to grant, giving her a job in the intelligence community that he has no authority to grant, and she walks out of this building, and I'm trying to figure out, you already gave it away, but I'm trying to figure out where is this building, because I'm outside of Washington, D.C., but I work in D.C. for the last 30 years. I know D.C., and I'm like, I don't recognize that building. It's supposed to be Washington, D.C., but I don't recognize that building. It's the state capital of Atlanta, of Georgia, in Atlanta. That is the state capitol building in Atlanta, which we kind of can figure out, because right after that scene, they thank Atlanta, Georgia, for being able to film there. So I guess that's where the hearing room was.
Yeah, there's so many things wrong with this. So working theory, they had Julia for one day. So they filmed all of her stuff in one location. So that's why that was very lazy. And so why they figured out, all right, we rented this room, we'll do it there. And it's like, you
are probably exactly right about, and that's when you start to hear things like that, you're like, okay, now this makes a lot of sense. I'll give them a mulligan on it. Cause there's, if you remember back from, which one would it be? I guess it might be Endgame is when they go back in time to get the stones, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. In Endgame, when they go back, when Iron Man and Captain America go back to, what is it, 1971?
Yeah.
They get the stone from his dad, Howard Stark, who I just watched Mamma Mia last night and reminded that the guy from Mamma Mia played the young Howard Stark in the earlier Captain America films.
Awesome.
But, you know, when they go into the elevator, when they first go into the secret building, there's a woman in the elevator with her. And I read an article a few weeks ago of that, the woman, she's an actress. I'm sorry that I'm blanking on her name, so apologize to the actress. But what was interesting about that is that she had filmed that scene something like 2 years earlier to that she thought it was going to be in Civil War. And then when she watched Civil War, it wasn't there. She just figured it got cut. She was doing a cameo. That was all. I think she's someone known, and it was just to be a cameo. And then she was shocked and pleasantly shocked to see that they used it 2 years later as part of Endgame. So it was something like, probably you're exactly right. I bet anything you're probably exactly right. They just filmed all of her, Julia Louis-Dreyfus's scenes on the same day, so that, yeah, in the bigger picture, it doesn't make sense when you see the scenes, unless you know, look, we only got her for a day. We got to pay her $150,000 for the day. We got to maximize every scene we can get.
There's no travel time. We're doing this all here. Go. Yeah. And that makes sense. It's weird. Because it would have made more sense if, when she first talked to Walker, if she gave him a briefcase with the new uniform. So again, that would have changed the reveal. So he wouldn't be acting as Captain America. But I feel Dreyfus's Val is fundamentally different from the comic because of who the actress is. And I adore the actress. So like, I don't mind it as much. It's like, okay, it's a different spin because we have an actress with chops who can have some fun with it. So let's everyone sit back and enjoy Julia, and everyone get out popcorn and cheer for watching Elaine in a superhero TV show. Well, and I can dig it.
And now we know, I mean, they left, obviously, understandably, so many threads open to see, do they want to do more of these types of short series? They have now announced there's going to be a Captain America 4 movie. Obviously, we don't know what storyline will be in that. They probably don't know what storyline it will be in it yet. But, you know, presumably it might tie in all of these storylines. But we'll see. My final point, I think, from other than what you might have to say, my final point to talk about is Isaiah Bradley. You know, the actor who portrayed him has a lot of people, some of the articles I read, you know, thought he did and I agree, he did a really good job, very powerful character. There is a lot more to his story in the comic books than what anybody would know from the move from these episodes. I don't even know them very well. I just know it exists, that there is a lot more character development. His grandson, there is a character development because he becomes a character in the comic books as well. We'll see if that develops in the Marvel Universe, but they allow that. But I, you know, so struck by two things struck me when Sam takes him down back to the Smithsonian, to the Captain America exhibit, to now have and Isaiah Bradley exhibit about what was done to him and his compadres back in the Korean conflict time era, where they basically in a Tuskegee CIA LSD experiments gave them super serum without telling them, African-Americans, most of whom didn't survive. And as he explained in a prior episode, the U.S. government was going to kill these African-American super soldiers who were taken hostage by, or POWs by, some unknown power. I don't think they revealed who it was, but it might have been, I presume, North Korea and the Chinese, I guess, and the Soviets back in Korean conflict. And he instead broke them out, rescued them, like we saw in Captain America, when Captain America rescued all of Bucky and everybody else and the Furies guys from the Red Skull, but was then prosecuted, or not, probably not even prosecuted, thrown in jail for 30 years. So this exhibit reveals all of that. And so all I'm thinking two things going through my head. Oh my God, Sam, the guy told you he didn't want to be known. He's dead. Everybody thinks he's dead. And now you have revealed everything about him. He's going to be on the news. I'm not sure he wants that. I mean, it looked like he obviously was heartfelt, you know, tear struck. That's good. That's good, because I was concerned. And then I'm also thinking, hey, Sam, all of this, for it probably improper purposes, is classified information. And you've just revealed it. Of course, you know, he did it with the – he didn't design this. This is the Smithsonian. Somebody designed this exhibit. Plus, I'm also thinking that it looked like there were already people walking around there. So why Bradley didn't know that there was an exhibit about him before Sam went to him is probably another storyline error that is left undiscussed.
So a couple things with that, and I agree. And I did think it was part of the things that they got right with the storytelling. So that's, I do want to highlight the positive with this.
It was a good positive, story aspect of it. Yes.
So I would hope that the new Captain America called the President of the United States and said, "So, found out about this. You need to declassify it so we can honor this guy." And hopefully that got the wheels turning to go like, all right, Smithsonian, go to work. Here's the budget. Let's make this happen. And we're going to honor this man who saved a whole bunch of people and that we as a government screwed. So we're going to fix this right now. That said, that doesn't necessarily disclose that he's still alive. So this could be like trying to hide in plain sight type of thing.
Everything we were led to believe is he's still using his same name,
which is insane. But yeah,
Baltimore, Maryland, and the statues still look like him.
Yeah,
he aged really well. Maybe that's the super serum, right?
Yeah,
he doesn't age that well. I mean, it doesn't age that much. We know that from the super serum. Even though Captain America looks like Joe Biden when he's 95 years old, but that's a separate issue. But you know, I'm now thinking this is where I, as a lawyer, and I said this, I'm representing this guy because, man, Isaiah, I'm getting you, this court martial is going to be reversed. You're going to be honorably discharged. You're going to get a promotion, and you're getting at least $30 million in compensation. And as much as Baltimore, I think, is an awesome city, you are moving out of the inner city of Baltimore and going somewhere else.
Yeah, that could be an awesome mock trial to do. That actually could be a ton of fun to do that. And you know, factor in the, like, some of the folks that we know, that I know, who are, you know, assistant U.S. attorneys, to pick their brain, because I'm pretty sure their reaction would be, "We're going to settle this real fast."
Yeah, this is
trial. We're not going to get to discovery. We're going to get this done like Thursday. So, and you know, expect the expect it to come down from on high. You know, with get out the checkbook. We're making this go away as quickly as possible. So, because we don't screw war heroes when we find out what happened. So that would be, but yeah, that could be a really fun mock trial. Mm-hmm. It could be a fun article as well to write up on like how to represent him and to vindicate his rights. So, good eye. And since you do that sort of thing in real life, I would add my thoughts on this, that despite all of the legal stuff that they botched, they get the essence of Captain America right, of what the character is supposed to represent, you know, like the best of us. And they do the chemistry between, you know, Sam and Bucky is great, because the actors have great chemistry together. They're fun to watch in interviews, of like, they honestly seem to be good dudes who enjoy each other's company. And so that part they got right. And since this is the 80th anniversary of Captain America, it's a fitting story to tell that, you know, even though the person who wields the shield changes, you know, he still represents us. There, and that's important. The Marvel did a wonderful TV segment for the 75th anniversary, and they talked about how Captain America's spirit, you know, like that of the character, is representative of us as a country, and they, you know, they were showing clips of, you know, like famous people who are heroes, Amelia Earhart, and I'm pretty sure Martin Luther King was in there. But you know, there was only one elected person that they showed, and that was John McCain.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and it's like, I saw that, I was like, that makes sense. I'm very on board with that. That makes a lot of sense for if you show anyone elected, that it was him. So with that, I say I loved this show, despite the fact it gave me heartburn.
You know, I am still, I am looking forward to whatever is next. I still love these characters, and I think there is enough in the way of storyline out there that jumping the shark in specific episodes might not continue on to the storyline. There is so much storyline there to be developed. So I am glad that there is something. I look forward to Loki in June and Black Widow in July and the whole host of other movies and series that are coming out. And I imagine, you know, Disney is evaluating to see how successful this and WandaVision was from a financial standpoint to determine what else they can do. Because, I mean, the reality is, from a corporate standpoint, a lot of this comes down to money. And if this is making them money, then we will continue to see these stories and these characters develop, so long as the actors can continue, and then they'll have to figure things out. There was in the news this week, a group of people put up a billboard, I think in New York City, to bring Tony Stark back. It was unclear whether they wanted Robert Downey Jr. back, whether it was something advocating for him or it was advocating for the character. But at this stage in time, is there a difference? No, I'm not sure there is a difference between the two of them at the moment.
So there's comic history time. So with the Ironheart series coming out with Riri Williams, who makes her own battle armor. Anyway, in the comic with her, her AI is Tony Stark. So that could be a way, you know, to have Tony back as a mentor, that he's virtual, and you know, and instead of, you know, he's the voice that's giving her advice. The Armor Wars series that they're working on, where it's based off, I think, more of the 80s comic that I loved as a kid. And I hope that they do a mix of, you know, there was the element from Demon in the Bottle where Tony's alcoholism, he wasn't Iron Man anymore. Mm-hmm. And Rhodey became Iron Man. I want to see Rhodey become Iron Man and stop being War Machine for that series, because it's like, one, Tony would have wanted it that way. Two, if you're protecting Tony's legacy, protect it as Iron Man. So again, those are my hopes, that as we see the heroes can continue even if they're different people, because we've done that in the comics.
To some extent they've locked themselves into some of these actors, and the actor who plays Rhodey, however it's pronounced, he's like my age. He's in his 50s. So, I mean, he isn't in armor, so I guess, you know, it's not like Captain America where...
You're doing tumbling. Yeah.
Actually, Captain America would be a bad example because of the super serum, because he'll always be a lot younger than he is. You know, let's think of somebody else, you know, Black Widow or Hawkeye or someone who, frankly, they have incredible skills, but they have no superpowers at all. So at some point in time, you know what, their knees are going to give way because they're just older. Like it is for all of us. Or their asthma is going to be too much, you know, whatever it might be. You know, you just can't fall from a building as easily as you used to. You know, it happens, you know, with age.
Yeah, that's the thing. And again, it's like with the Hawkeye series, it's both, you know, supposed to be Clint and Kate Bishop. So like training the next generation. So I think they have a contingency plan for being able to move things forward. And the idea of people wanting to see Robert Downey Jr., because he is nice and he's an awesome guy. You know, having him as the AI could be one way.
Because his voice is probably going to stay the same for at least the next 20, 30 years.
Yeah, and then you do the Obi-Wan Kenobi hologram type thing with them.
Right. In years from now, the special effects will be even better. So yeah. Governor Tarkin, was that his name in Star Wars?
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? That guy's been dead for like 40 years or something. Yeah, there he was, you know, on the screen. The actor's been dead for, you know, 3-4 decades, literally. Hey, you know, we have to come up with some good slogan for, you know, if there's a soup, something like where we do a sign off at the end of each episode, you know, stay tuned, because if there's a superhero movie, there'll be legal issues. You know, I don't know.
Legally yours. Yeah, there's a, we'll work on that, because we do have, we have our pandemic closing that I'll give right now of stay safe, stay healthy, and stay geeky. And Mark, thank you so much. This has been fun. And I know that we have a ton more things to discuss, because, you know, there's also the MODOK series that'll be coming out on Hulu, I think, next month. So again, there's a lot of good things that we can be talking about.
Josh, it's always a pleasure.
Thank you. Everyone, thank you for tuning in, and be well.